Hello there. Welcome to the relaunch of the Oblivious Maximus podcast. I'm Aaron Osborne, now one of two hosts. Please welcome Ben Searle.
G'day. Thanks for having me, Aaron.
Well, you're here all the time now, so.
Just for this first one. Thanks. Yeah. Thanks for having me.
So Searle and I are going to do this together now because he was one of the most appeared guests. And also we just talk all the time. So
just easier.
Why not? Yeah, it's easier just to record it rather than just otherwise talking. But so I figured we'd do, when I say I, we figured we'd do a bit of a pre-getting into it with other people pod where we just talk to each other.
Yes.
And chat about ourselves, something I haven't done in a year or something, whatever it was. It's a lot longer than that.
Yeah, well, I guess, the idea is that we'd have a new guest every week and I suppose that, had a bit of a music focus in the past, but I guess you did start interviewing a few comedians about music.
Yeah, just through you, essentially.
Yep.
Just people interviewing your friends.
People I know personally, yeah.
Who are now, I would say, I'm friendly with a lot of them too, so.
Yeah.
Thank you for that.
It's a relatively small scene, the Melbourne comedy scene. It's like, in a year, you just meet Husey.
Yeah. Can't wait to have him on.
Yeah.
All right, so today, what are we going to talk about?
Well, yeah, I thought we kind of thought that it'd be good to like interview each other as a bit of an intro for, I'm sure there's probably people that know you very well.
Yeah.
Maybe not me so much, and then maybe some new people that are the opposite. But I imagine there's probably a fair bit of crossover.
Hey, all of our friends.
Yeah, you sort of start off with podcasts with mostly people you know personally listening in. I definitely probably count my mum as one of the listeners.
Yeah.
G'day, Sham.
Hey, my family. How are you? Also, I'd like to note before we get too deep into this how much better this looks and sounds than probably I ever did in the past.
Yeah, I mean, it's good stuff in here. We're at Stupid Old Studios in Coburg. I have a desk here at the moment, and it comes with this dope podcast studio as a little bonus thing. Yeah. And it's a sick place. If you want to record a pod, get down here and it can look exactly like this.
You'll leave the flags and stuff around that we've brought in ourselves.
Well, a lot of comedians are starting to record podcasts in here. I was like, let's put some goofy shit up.
Yeah, we got to get Plucker a seat.
Yeah, Plucker, get him in here.
All right, let's go. Let's rip.
Yeah, let's do it. Well, I'll start asking you a few questions because I think people may be a bit more familiar with you, but yeah, tell us, some of you probably heard a lot of this before if you're fans of the pod, but yeah, tell us where did you grow up? Where are you from? How did you get to your life in music?
So again, if you've heard all this before, just keep listening. I might, embellish some new information for you, make something up, who knows?
Go back and cut together the early episodes.
Old answers from old podcasts. So I grew up, I was born in Australia, and then I grew up in Taiwan, Fiji, and Shanghai predominantly, with stints coming back to Australia. And, was like a classic diplomat kid, went to American schools, had a very thick American accent, got into music from my mum and my dad, but also, and probably most predominantly MTV.
Yeah.
Because it was like the major, it was the 90s. It was like the huge
peak of it. Yeah.
Of MTV. And it was one of the main channels in, in China and in Taiwan that was always in English.
Yeah.
So I could always watch everything on it. And I started, I guess, through, like any young person in pop music. And as I've talked about at length on this podcast previously many years ago, I was like the biggest Michael Jackson fan ever.
How do you feel about that now?
Well, that it's pretty funny. It comes up. Well, not funny, but it comes up a lot. You know, not good.
Yeah, it's hard, isn't it?
Separate the art from the.
Yeah, even saying that is hard now. But
You know, king of pop, but fuck him, burn in hell, yeah. Kind of whatever. Yeah, so I got into a. I mean, you know, just got heavily into music through pop music, obviously, and then that translated into hip hop because of MTV, because of the '90s, and then that spiraled into nu metal, and then my parents got divorced, and.
New metal was there to hold you up.
Yeah, exactly. Korn saved my life.
It's interesting about the, because I guess people know you as a, you know, you're into death metal and
brutal shit,
but you got a big hip hop. Our friend Matt was very bamboozled.
taken aback. Truly didn't know that I'd like knew stuff about hip hop. And Eric, one of our other friends, who's a will never listen to this, but is big hip hop guy, still.
I think they call it a head.
A head, yeah, a hip hop head. And at this conversation, which was happening at my birthday party, he was me and him were just chopping it up about Outkast and
the greats.
Yeah, New Orleans hip hop, other stuff like that. And Matt was sitting there like, you know, a deer in the headlights, had no idea that I knew stuff about rap. I got into it through that. And then, I mean, I still love all that stuff. It's just I listen to so much brutal shit now that I, you know, don't have a lot of time.
Not getting out to many rap conos.
No, I'm not actually. That would surprise some people, I'm sure. I moved back to Canberra after my parents got divorced and then went to high school, had long hair, did the metal bit, got further and further into doing that, and then started playing in bands. And then that's now what led to where I am now, playing in hardcore bands, playing in metal bands.
Yeah.
Predominantly hardcore. But then now I suppose everything that I play probably leans more metal, which ties back to what I actually listen to. But I would say, you know, I'm a hardcore person. I come from that scene. That is.
Well, I think like when you were I felt like at that time, like Canberra had a big hardcore scene. I don't know what it's like now. Do you have much of a sense of.
A little bit. Like, I mean, it definitely has like a scene. It has a scene that is way younger than. Mm. I mean, hardcore. I said this to someone the other night, like, this is not music for grown-ups. This is music for Peter Pan teenagers. Like, you know, I'm a grown-up. I like the music, but it's for young people. It's its purpose is for young people.
It is angst.
Yeah, exactly.
Mortified.
So, I mean, there's a scene there now that's like, it appears to be like flourishing. I mean, I haven't lived in Canberra for a long time though. So someone else asked me that the other day is like, I don't know, I guess once you get to a certain age and you're from somewhere, you become like you're like the old head from that place, which is funny for me because like still my like Canberra old heads are still there and they're still going to shows and stuff. So like that hasn't ended yet.
No.
It
felt like it never, it sort of, I guess, is probably, at least in Melbourne, had a lull for a few years.
Yeah.
And then it's probably stronger. It's stronger than I remember it being in a long time.
Oh, yeah. It's crazy now. Like, I mean, I don't know if it was, I mean, COVID might have been part of that too, but there was like, you know, 2 years of doing nothing. And then now there's fucking four shows a week kind of thing.
Well, I think people want to be involved in something or like feel part of, people going crazy at home and watching Hate 5-6 videos and go,
yeah,
get me off that stage, like on it, then off it very quickly.
Yeah. Yeah, let me leap off that stage. I mean, I think the other thing too is it was like three years really of like pent up creativity that people had nowhere to put. So that's why there's lots of bands now. That's why, you know, obviously venues wanted, you know, open the pubs, let them back in.
Well, it feels like we went to a show on Friday that yep. was AWOL and Knuckle Dragger from Brisbane and mm. a few others, and it was pumping.
It was absolutely cranking in there. I was stunned, I will say.
Of how busy it was.
Yeah, not to, that's no shade against those bands at all, but I was just like.
It was good to see. Yeah.
Yeah, it's great. I mean, I didn't expect it, and I was very happy for them, and all the bands played great, and, you know, I spent a lot of time drinking, so my night was amazing.
But also done and very early.
Oh, that was the talk of the show. Like, over at 10:45, I think.
Yeah.
Which is unheard of. I didn't get home until like 2 o'clock in the morning. But yeah, it was wild. But yeah, the show was crazy. Lots of people there. You know, we also, I mean, I know you recently talked about this on another podcast, but we were at the same venue like a week prior, 2 weeks prior.
Yeah.
And saw like the weirdest thing I think either of us had ever seen at a show.
Yeah, a small, I'll say a child.
a very young person.
Like probably maybe turned 18 the day before.
Yeah.
We went and saw American band Dying Wish
mm-hmm.
play a last minute.
Yeah, Sunday show thing.
Headline show down at the Bendigo, which was sick. They were great. Interesting setting to see them in. Like they're definitely like they've done a lot of big tours and stuff lately, and seeing them at the Bendigo, I think they put on a hell of a show.
Yeah.
But a kid coming out of the pit, up to the bar, asking the person behind the bar, "Someone hit me. What do I do?"
which and I is think, sick. Yeah, I think both you and I were just entranced with the conversation this child was having with a bartender who could not have given a fuck. Like. Couldn't have cared less, basically.
She seemed a little bamboozled. She was just like, yeah, like, what do you mean? I don't think anyone had ever. And then,
said that to her ever.
Yeah. And she pointed him towards the security guard, and the security guard was like, you know, he's like, "I've been hit." And the security guard was like, thinking he'd been punched or something, you know, but it was just on the side of the pit that someone had sort of clocked him. And I just saw the security guard's face kind of go, "Oh, yeah. what do you want me to do about it?" kind of thing.
Yeah. Call your mum. Get her to pick you up.
And I guess we commented, the funny thing about it was, you know, like everyone's got to have a first show and everyone's got to figure it out. But surely in this day and age you've seen some sort of footage online.
How did you get to that show without knowing what
the band was about? Yeah.
Like 18-year-olds aren't just like, "Get me down to the Bendigo." Got to get to Bit of Shade on the Bendigo. Not a great pub.
Yeah. It's dank in there. And, you know, look.
There's some fixing they could do.
If anyone from the Bendigo is listening, you know what it's like.
Yeah. I'm sorry, but, like, I'll give you some feedback. I mean, I know what good pubs are like.
Yeah.
And I'm sure you do too. But, anyway, sorry, the Bendigo, just, I don't know, clean your taps or something.
Yeah.
But yeah, so like I can't imagine that kid was just like rocking in randomly, like walking down
Johnson Street
and going like, "Gotta get in there.
Gotta get into the rock show."
Yeah.
Anyway. We've gone off on a tangent,
yeah,
but
of course.
That is our right to do so.
That's podcasting, baby.
That's podcasting. You know, played music.
Yeah.
I do play music.
I do.
How did that start? What instruments do you play? Like what bands have you been in? How's your journey in music been?
So I guess I started playing music when I was really young through mum and through living overseas, I guess. It was just something to do. But mum plays piano, so we all started playing piano. And then I played like every school band instrument you can. Like 1 year was the cello. The next year was a clarinet. The next year was a trombone. Just like churn and throw them to try and find the thing that I was kind of good at. I somehow like faked my way through many years of playing the trombone, but was playing the piano the whole time as well.
When was the last time you picked up the trombone?
Well, actually, this is kind of funny music industry chat. I played in the school band I was in, the trumpet player who like sat next to me in the school band, who was a couple of years older than me in school, later went on to be in that band, the Porkers.
Hell yeah.
Like massive Australian ska band. And I remember at a time I would just sit there, like the songs got harder and harder and I'd stopped practicing years before. But it wasn't a very big high school, so I was just like one of two trombone players. And there was, you know, the Porkers man here and then the guy who could play the trombone to the right of me. And I just sort of figured out where you moved your hand, but I had not at all done any of the practice to like the, I don't know what's called, the embouchure, whatever you do with your, and what you do with your lips to make sure that you hit the right notes. So I was just playing nothing and just moving my hand. And I think maybe I got like caught doing that. And that's when I stopped playing drum. I've definitely not told that story in a podcast before.
Being busted faking the trombone.
In the school band.
It's like the opposite of juicing.
But at the same time, I was sort of doing that. I was also just doing like so much music at school. And our high school had like a really good, you know, anyone could go and play guitar whenever they wanted. There was a kind of a jam room and you could just go muck around and there. You could book it at lunchtime and stuff.
Yeah, and so I remember doing a bit of that.
Yeah, yeah.
PAC, Performing Arts Center.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And, you know, there was like a zillion Yamaha C40 acoustic guitars that are just like, even if you don't know what brands and models guitars are, you've seen this guitar before. You've probably held it. It's in every like parent's house or high school in Australia. So I just had a shitload of them. So everyone was just playing guitar. I started learning how to play guitar. I also had pretty good time because of playing so many different instruments. So I could play, like I could bang around on the drums a little bit. And then when I really started playing in bands was when I was like 12 or 13, was playing drums because I was like, you know, one of two kids in the school that could play drums.
Yeah, sick.
So I started playing drums and then that, you know, spiraled for years and years. And then it landed, I played in lots of silly metal bands in Canberra when I was really young. One that is like, this band is still going, good on them, is a death metal band from Canberra called Reign of Terror. When I joined the band, I was 14 or 15 and the singer was 33 when I...
How does that come about?
Well, because you could go... It was like relatively easy at the time in Canberra to sneak into shows. Like you could... I mean, and this is like... I don't know if this still happens or... I mean, liquor licensing has gotten stricter in Australia. But like at the time, you could just go into pubs and just say like, hey, I won't drink. And the pub are going to be like, okay, don't. And
you better not.
You could be there. And so I met the guys from the band through doing that, basically, like going to shows. It's also how I met Josh, who was in I Exist and stuff. Like I met Josh, I think, when I was like 14 maybe, and he was also 35 or however our age difference works. but yeah, I played in that band and then I met people from the hardcore scene essentially through going to lots of different shows. And then I started playing in a band called Top Gun with other guys from Canberra who are now have been in lots of different bands and some I'm still in bands with. And then that just spiraled into everything else I've done from Slow Burn. Sick. Was Slow Burn just half of us started I Exist and then I moved here and that's how everything else happened basically. Yeah, that's my story, man.
What a web we weave.
Yeah.
That's sick. What's out of all that, like what is the best that you felt playing music?
I guess there's different things. Like I suppose like I would say probably most of the best shows I've ever played, probably ever will play with I Exist. Just because of the you know, iron was hot, struck at the right time kind of thing.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, we toured with my favorite band. Like, there's never going to be, I can't top that. Yeah. I toured with my favorite band here. I played a show with them in Hungary, which is the craziest thing ever. I punished my way into becoming like friendly with them. Went to a band practice of theirs at their jam room. Like, what more? There's no peak.
There's no better than that.
There's no better than that.
Not many people can say that.
Yeah. And it was really funny. Like, I mean, I'm talking about I Hate God, obviously. And when it was really funny when it occurred, I had been staying with my friends who play in Twitching Tongues. I'd been staying with them beforehand, and then I went to New Orleans, had this silly night where I got real drunk and was at I Hate God's band practice, and then went back to LA afterwards. And I posted the photo on Instagram, and like all of them just texted me and they're like, how the fuck did you end up at that band practice? And I was like, it's pretty easy to punish your way into just anything. If I can do it, anyone can do it. So if you haven't got any, you know, plans to punish your way into someone's band practice, you can make it happen.
Yeah. Well, if anyone's listening, still trying to get into Taylor Swift, a few lessons to be learned here.
Just start sweating her on the internet, I'm sure. Yeah. That was probably the peak.
Yeah. Sick.
Yeah.
And podcasting, I guess you started.
Well, yeah. And the podcasting thing's funny too, because people bring that up now, like, because, you know, podcasting now is like the biggest thing in the world. I mean, look at this.
They make rooms for it now.
Make rooms for it, literally. I think we started this podcast in its original form. I think I started doing it in 2015. I think. So 9 years ago, which is crazy. And even then, I think then podcasts were kind of booming too. Because then was when, like, you know, the Marc Maron one got really big and lots of stuff like that started getting huge. But I mean, this is going to end up on that same feed. So, I mean, you can go back and listen to them if you really feel like it. But like the first one is so bad. Like, I've not revisited in a long time, but like, I mean, it's literally one of those Zoom recorders that have like the two pronged things on the end. I mean, I'm sure I did one of them with you too, but like the first one was literally that on a mic stand in mine and my friend Patty's living room, so that the microphones were angled at either of us on the corners of a couch. And it was like 2.5 hours long. And it was just like me talking to Patty about our life, basically. That's how this podcast started.
It's funny to think that, like, I would say that every podcast I listen to now is pretty professional.
Yeah.
Even the like amateur ones, which is, you know, this is that.
Yeah.
But it's crazy the amount of podcasts that I used to listen to that were recorded like that.
Oh, yeah.
Just the like, and people like having lunch and just sticking one of those in the middle of a table.
Definitely I did a bunch at pubs too. I mean, I know I did one with you at a pub for sure.
Yes.
I think we did it outside at the commercial.
That's right. I'd actually forgotten all about that.
There's definitely like, I'm pretty sure there's in the recording, some guy comes and like clears the table. And there was another one I did with somebody at a pub, and the guy's like, you know, a head away from the microphone, like, what are you guys doing? Like, oh, what are those things? And it's like, oh yeah, it's a recording, man. And then when I was mixing it afterwards, I was like, I'm leaving that in. Like,
yeah, that's funny.
That's too funny to cut out.
We should get back to that. Fuck this room off.
Yeah, we've come too far with podcasting. All right. Well, now I've talked about my shit. Should we change gears?
Flip it.
So for the benefit of people who don't know who you are, I am looking at my phone, by the way. So I brought a computer. I have not brought a computer. All right. So same question starting. Where'd you grow up? What'd you do? How'd you get here?
Well, yeah, I grew up in Melbourne, like outside of Melbourne. I've like kind of always pretty much lived here.
Mm.
I grew up in like the sort of Yarra Valley area, Wanda North. Pretty sort of semi-rural now. It's a bit more built up now. my dad still lives out there. But yeah, I guess back then, yeah, it was very much like finding out about music stuff and all that sort of stuff was very much like rage and recovery and all that sort of stuff. But I feel like there was a lot of people, you know, at school and stuff playing music and things like that. So, but yeah, I think growing up in those areas and then turned, I think my first share house, it's funny to think first share house was in like Nutterwadding, is like the burbs. My friend Sean, family friends that had a house in that area and I moved in with a couple of mates there, which was like fucking freezing in winter and yeah, really depressing. Like looking back on it, I think we moved out because it was just like, can't do another winter in this place.
Oh God.
And then yeah, moving, I think I did like a little bit of time overseas, like, you know, did the classic like gap year kind of thing.
Got to get out of here.
Gap year from an apprenticeship. basically like I wish I'd gone to uni at that point. And then, yeah, since getting back from that trip, well, I moved to Warrnambool very briefly, went to uni down there. Not much happening down there.
Got to get out of Melbourne. Yeah. Get me down to Warrnambool.
Go to Deakin Uni at Warrnambool. but, yeah, I think going to shows and stuff started, like, I guess the freezer stuff was pretty big.
Yeah.
I don't know if they had an equivalent in Canberra. I'm sure they would have. But
It wasn't like council running Canberra. Like, it was, like, every...
The AFP.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it was like the youth centers did it themselves kind of thing.
Yeah. Well, and freezer shows were kind of big when I was growing up. And I think my first proper show was Sunk Lodo at PV's in Croydon, which was pretty dope.
Yeah.
And yeah, it just started, I guess, with that sort of stuff. And then you move a bit closer into the city. And I think, yeah, I was going to lots of shows at like the Art House and stuff like that. That was kind of as soon as I turned 18 and had some mates that were kind of in the metal scene. A mate of mine like played in a metal band, or he's a mate of mine now, but he was my my older brother. He was my mate's older brother at the time. We went to see his metal band heaps around town, and we just followed them around everywhere.
Yeah,
and ended up at the Art House, and like, this place is cool. And then at that time, it was just like you just go there. You know, 18, 19, you just go there because you're just like, whatever show's on, I'm sure it'll be good.
So maybe the Bendigo and that kid.
Possibly, yeah. I mean,
maybe I talk shit too soon.
I mean, I remember being like seeing my first Mindsnare show there and kind of being blown away. But
yeah,
I mean, I had some idea of what was going to happen.
Yeah, yeah.
But I did maybe have someone who was a bit older kind of like, this is
guide you through.
Guide you through. So. Yeah. I mean, that's pretty much music, you know, finding out about music is that mate's older brother shows you, you know, chucks on Tool and then you rip into that. But then since getting back from overseas and uni and stuff, I think just have lived around the city for a long time. And yeah.
I mean, like we met through music, obviously.
Yes.
But I would say, I mean, most people now who are aware of your, you know, goings on other than your friends would have it from comedy.
Yeah.
And so what, I mean, I kind of know the backstory of this because I was there when it was happening.
Yeah.
But for the listener, what was the transition like? I mean, I know, I remember just, you know, side note, when seeing you in bands, you were always like, you're the guy talking.
Yes, yes. Well, that, I guess, like, I kind of was just a punter for a long time.
Mm.
You know, it's just going to shows and kind of part of the scene and going to see shows. And then I guess the kind of, you know, that whole Art House scene and the show, the punk stuff around that. And then I guess the sort of adjacent Poison City sort of scene got started.
Mm.
And then I started playing in a couple of bands. One was Kissing Booth, which was, you know, sort of weaker than pop rock kind of stuff. And and then was playing in another band, Summerhill, which became Crush. And then, yeah, I guess music just didn't quite, I love it and I enjoy seeing it. But I think playing it didn't quite scratch the itch that I was, like, I enjoyed talking more in between songs.
Yeah.
And as much fun as I, like, it was a couple of years playing in Kissing Booth and touring and, you know, played a heap of sick shows, and Crush did a little bit in a short time as well. I mean, I had an overlap of doing stand-up, and then I guess the stand-up thing started. It was, I mean, I would say I kind of started late at like 27. Yeah. I mean, people start at all sorts of ages, but I think people start sort of younger. But I think it just took me a while to get around to the idea of it. I think I always listened to stand-up, and, you know, things like YouTube were kind of, you know, stand-up on YouTube was becoming a big thing.
Mm.
But it just was never very clear, like, how to do it in Australia.
Yeah.
And then things like podcasts start, and I started listening to the Little Dum Dum Club and other podcasts like that, and they would talk about shows that were on. So I started going to the bigger shows that are kind of more established. And
yeah,
I think a lot of people go and see, you know, comedy at the comedy festival, and I would do that every year. But it sort of took someone saying, like, oh, there's comedy on it all the time.
Tuesday.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, most of the gigs are on during the week.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, the bigger shows and stuff are on the weekends, and there's bigger venues like the Comics Lounge and things like that. And now there's other clubs like Comedy Republic. But I think and a couple of things happened at the same time is that, you know, an open mic scene started to develop in Melbourne as well.
Mm-hmm.
So there were actually gigs you could go up and sign up on the night, and you would just get on at some point. So
yeah,
that scene kind of kicked off in Melbourne, and it was easier to do. And I guess the access to that information, because Facebook became a thing, you know, much like finding out about shows through MySpace.
Yeah.
Then Facebook kicked off, and groups and things on Facebook, and there was a group on Facebook of like Melbourne comedy, and people would post all the, I mean, they still do. It's a nightmare in there. people would post about open mics that were on, and you could go and sign up. And so that kind of, you know, and I remember talking to a good friend of mine, Christian, who I went to high school with, and we went to a comedy festival one year, which would have been 2014. And I think we both were like, oh, we've been thinking about trying it. And we're like, let's go to our first gigs together. And it probably took another year of kind of going to a few shows. And then midway through 2015, I signed up for my first open mic and went. And it went sort of surprisingly well. You know, everything you hear about comedy media is like, you're going to bomb.
Yeah,
you're going to want to kill yourself after this. And you're like, am I? Like, I don't know if I... but then, you know, maybe it doesn't go as bad as you think. And, you know, I think the second time it went all right as well. So it kind of gave me at least something. And then you eat shit for ages. You maybe get a bit too overconfident. And then there was this gig on a Tuesday night on Gertrude Street called The Wild.
Mm-hmm.
And it was this shitty upstairs of this weird pub. It had this, like, stage that was probably made out of MDF or something. And I remember, like, every footstep on that stage, you would hear people clanking around. And but yeah, it was good. Like, it was, and that's kind of just, and then I would do that a lot. And then a couple, you know, a guy named Pete Jones was running that. He kind of was pretty encouraging, and he's been pretty encouraging to a lot of people. So you start asking to get on other gigs, and you do other open mics, and then eventually someone's like, oh, come do this booked show, and then it kind of goes from there.
Yeah.
So it just took a lot of doing it.
Yeah.
And I think once I got that kind of taste, it's just sort of...
Yeah, well, I mean, I think the other thing too is, like, I'm, again, like, covering some real untread territory here talking about getting into stand-up on a podcast. But, you know, like you said, like, every other thing talks about, like, you know, show one and two, you just eat shit and then maybe you get better or whatever. But I think the other thing too is, like, maybe for you there was a little bit of, like, well, I've been on a stage before, so I'm not, like, nervous about standing in front of people. I mean, and I think that's the thing, and it translates, it can even translate to, like, work. I think you and I have also worked together in professional capacity.
Corporate
capacity. But, you know, there's a thing that always comes up at work, you know, in every job I've ever had basically is like, how are you so confident, like in a meeting? I was like, I mean, we're all getting paid to be here. This is,
yeah, easy.
I can say anything up here. Like, whereas like, oh, at a show, if the song I play is shit or the bit I do is bad, then everyone's going to hate it. At least at this, if a joke falls flat, like I know I'm still getting paid and
yeah,
we're all even.
Exactly. You know? Like, yeah, it's a funny thing. Well, I was definitely not as confident before starting stand-up, but it kind of really opened me up a lot as well.
Yeah.
I was quite an, you know, very like nervous, like, I don't know. I think maybe the band stuff definitely helped as well. Like,
yeah,
you know, having to sort of talk to an audience and get them on side and then kind of stand up, you know, did that, you know, sort of helped that again.
Yeah.
So
like in terms of stand up itself though, what was like, you know, obviously you've mentioned like going to the local shows really pushed it, but what was the stuff that you liked that made you want to do it?
Well, I think in bands I'd never really – Kissing Booth, I kind of just played bass. Like I was sort of, you know, in playing music, I sort of played bass and I sang a bit. But I was never really that great at writing music, I would say,
mm-hmm.
without other people. And I think I found that particularly in the band Kissing Booth I played in, it was sort of, you know, it's just kind of – playing what was written sort of thing. So I didn't really feel ownership over that. And I mean, I really enjoyed playing live. Like that was fun. And then the other band I played in, Crush, I had a bit more of an input in that. And then I sang in that band and wrote all the lyrics and I really liked that. Mm. But then I was sort of more the person that was booking the shows and doing the organizing and, you know, and trying to wrangle three other people was definitely the hardest part as well. So I think going to stand up, it was very much like I'm only limited by how much I get that and I drive that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that was one aspect. And I guess trying to be funny was, you know, I liked that idea and learning how to write jokes and still very much learning that. Mm. And I think you just realize how many, you know, how many levels there are to it, I suppose. And, you know, I think a year I really pushed myself to do a lot of gigs in one year and that was kind of a big learning experience of kind of sacrificed a lot to do that. Well, not sacrificed, but, you know, you kind of put a lot of things aside to work towards that. But it was, yeah, I think I liked that aspect of comedy that it was I could just do it by myself. And I suppose it would be similar to, you know, being a solo performer in music as well. But I think, there are so many different avenues in comedy as well, I think as well. Or stand-up, I should say. That really drew me to it.
Yeah. And so, like, I guess one of the other things that I mean, we've, again, talked about this quite a lot, not recording it. But, you know, in the last year you've done, like, a shitload of shows. You went to Edinburgh, which is like enormous, obviously. People know the town a lot because of the festival.
Yes.
But so for you, I guess, going from doing a bunch of stuff in Melbourne, then scattered shows in Australia, you know, as kind of like testing the waters, then going overseas and doing a fuckload of shows in a short amount of time. What was that like in terms of like, I mean, just the condensed amount of doing it, but then the experience as well.
Well, I guess for people who don't know, the Edinburgh Fringe is like one of the biggest festivals.
For anyone who's devoid of culture listening to this.
For those unaware, it's a big deal. it's weird because you can talking about it with comedians, you're sort of like, you just sign up and go.
But
I guess, you know, not to discount it or anything like that.
I didn't know that until when you told me you were going. I was like, holy shit, that's so. And then you're like, oh, yeah, you just like log on.
Yeah. Well, that's the same thing with Melbourne Comedy Festival. People just sign up for it. Then, and it's, but it is still a pretty, it is a wild thing to do, to go over the other side of the world. Like, I hadn't done any comedy outside of Australia before. And, yeah, it was pretty surreal. Like, I think – and I also hadn't travelled for a while as well.
Yeah.
Like, I'd been overseas a lot, you know, in my early 20s or late 20s, and then kind of COVID happened and all that sort of stuff. Yeah. And so not only was – so I was away for about 6 weeks all up, and started off with two of those weeks, yeah, at the Fringe, which was something like 48 shows in, yeah, in two and a bit weeks, or maybe just over 2 weeks. And it was pretty – we were doing three shows a day with two other comics, and most of those shows with a guy named Pete Jones, who sort of mentioned earlier, and Luca Muller from Melbourne as well. And then we sort of sometimes rotate with a couple of other people as well. So you had a show at 11:15 in the morning, 12:30, and then 4:15. Oh, no, hang on. 11:15. 4:30 and then 10:30 at night, something like that.
Doing the thought the thought of attending live comedy at 11 a.m. to me seems like bonkers, let alone doing it.
I mean, that's the common thing that people said to me before going. And then you get there and you realize it's not so bizarre. Like, yeah. I think the big thing I didn't realize is how enormous that festival is. Like,
yeah.
I'd heard a lot from other comics, and you know, I've actually heard from a lot of comics that they don't like going to, don't like it there.
Yeah, right.
Maybe their comedy doesn't translate. They don't quite click in. It's a full on festival, and I would say I did it in probably one of the more, I did a lot of shows, but it was a really sort of easy way of doing it. You know, big thanks to Pete and Luca. They'd built up these shows that they had.
Had they been before?
They'd been a few times. Right, yeah, right, okay. Yeah. And they'd built up these shows called Three's Comedy, and we're doing them again this year. And they just kind of hit, and people who are not really sure what to see kind of go to those, because it's like three Australian comedians doing 15 minutes each, and or maybe a bit more. And it was kind of crazy seeing the amount of people that the morning show was some of our fuller shows.
Yeah, right.
And then
I guess if people have got like a packed day,
yeah,
and there's wild shit at nighttime, they got to just...
Exactly. Hook and I think almost the numbers were better for that morning show than sometimes the later show.
Yeah, right.
And you're also, there's a lot of shows on, and there's good shows on late at night as well. So you're sort of competing a bit more. And yeah, the 4:30 shows were really great as well. Like, you know, a bit more of a reasonable time. But yeah, yeah. It definitely was bizarre. Like, you know, waking up immediately, like, and we're staying in a flat with like four other guys, all trying to shower, and then the public transport is fucked because it's so busy.
Yeah,
and just try and power walk to this venue that's like 25 minutes away. We're trying to get accommodation for Edinburgh at the moment, and it is bonkers.
So, if anyone out there's listening. And you got a house in Edinburgh.
We're looking at this website, Edlets, and it's like definitely not upgraded. It's like built in HTML.
So here's a question for the universe. How come like every country can't just have some base level standardized, you know, accommodation searching functionality?
Not possible.
Not possible. Everywhere well, you go, you got to look on the local fucking thing.
Well, like, I mean, Airbnb is obviously there, but...
Yeah, but it's dog shit.
Yeah, but and it's also fucking expensive. Edlets is weirdly, you know, seemingly, it's not cheap, but it doesn't seem to price gouge as much as...
Airbnb does.
But, I mean, the prices are exorbitant. I will definitely be sharing a room with another person, I think, this year. So a month of that will be bonkers. Yeah. But, yeah, it's... yeah, it was a pretty surreal experience doing that, and then did a show in London as well, just like more of an open mic type one, and mm-hmm. It was, yeah, pretty bizarre kind of seeing how things translate. And
yeah, that was the next thing I was going to ask is like how did, not, you know, not that your jokes are like ochre or anything, but like
no,
how does that translate to a different sensibility?
Yeah, it's interesting. Like it's sort of interesting the things that you come across that are different. Like I think like little things like saying real estate agent instead of estate agent.
Yeah.
Particularly in the UK and Scotland, or in England and Scotland. And then I have a joke that talks about banh mi. Not many Vietnamese immigrants in the UK.
They're missing out on a great sandwich.
Yeah, not a lot of people know about the banh mi. They're really missing out.
As someone who's known you for a long time, you got to talk about a banh mi.
Yeah. You got to understand. other than that, there was not much that I... Well, I do have a joke about being in Melbourne and getting locked out, and the locksmith was French. And, yeah, not that weird in the UK.
They're all French.
Yeah, really close to France. It was a good experience mostly. Mm. I think for me it was just like, oh, like this is just another level.
Yeah.
Like it just really sort of opened me up a bit. So keen to get back.
Fuck yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I think that's kind of enough for this premiere of us talking to each other.
I think so, yeah. How long have we been going here? Surely.
Fucking ages. I don't know. Yeah, sick. But, all right, so I guess moving forward, the plan is have people on, not just you and me. They'll talk about things, we'll interject. Standard conversation etiquette applies. We have an episode recorded.
Yes.
To be transparent to the listener. Callum Preston, our dear friend.
Bit of sizzle for the Callum episode.
Yeah, I gotta pump it up.
Yeah.
We'll have Callum on. He'll talk about cool stuff. Listen to it when it comes out. But what do you got coming up otherwise? Little plug zone.
Every Tuesday I run Catfish Comedy, which is good. I run it with my mate Zach. So if you're keen to see some sick acts from around Melbourne and international and coming up to Comedy Festival in Melbourne, we got sick drop-ins and stuff coming along. And during Comedy Festival, we'll have like a rotating lineup of some big acts from the festival, fingers crossed. Mm. The last couple of years, so my mate Luca used to run the show and it's been a bit of a tradition to have big shows during Comedy Festivals. So leading up to that, we've got some big ones as well. So come to that. I've got a couple of trial shows with my mate Ty coming up, which I'm announcing soon, but they'll be at the Tote. Ooh. Upstairs. Sundays at 4 p.m.
Melbourne's home of live music.
Exactly.
Recently saved.
And then we're going to save it again.
Thank fuck.
will actually be my first time. Well, unless I duck in there before them, but it'll actually be my first time down there. So I'm keen to have a squiz.
Yeah. See if that carpet's still sticky.
Yeah, I'm sure it will be. But, we're doing those on Saturday at 4 p.m. I should fucking know the dates for this. check out my website, serlo.net. I'll have them up there. Still got to do the poster, but, yeah.
Sign up for the newsletter too.
Yes, the newsletter. I haven't done that in a bit, but coming again soon.
It's good.
But I named the newsletter back after my show Hammerhead from last year. The newsletter's called that now, so... all my links are on serlo.net.
The one place.
Yeah, and I've done all the web design in, just went back to my MySpace days of HTML. So, fuck paying for Squarespace.
Sick. Well,
how about you?
Oh, yeah, thanks. I've got, I don't know when we're going to put this up. I got an Aglo show, the band I do by myself with my friends, on the 22nd or 23rd of February, whatever the Friday is. If this goes up before then, great. If it goes up after then, I'm sure the show was dope as hell.
We'll get it happening.
I got that. Extortion are playing that Flippin' the Bird festival in Frankston.
Sick.
That'll be dope. Probably by the time this is out, I will have announced some other Extortion and Aglo stuff. So if I have, great. If not, follow my bands, Aglo and Extortion, and maybe my other bands, or I'm on the internet. You know, just get into it.
Yeah, look us up. Jump online. Well, you can find me on Instagram @serlo_. Didn't get the actual solo.
Yeah.
Dog took it.
Some fuckhead. Yeah, you can follow me too, I guess. Mine's private, but I'll allow it unless you look like someone I work with.
Yeah, you care more about your job than I do. Yeah.
Return trip. So that's it. Yeah, cool. Well, yeah, probably be doing these every week if we can.
Yeah. Well, at least one will be out every week.
Yeah. Whether we record them is another.
Will you know when they're recorded? Maybe not.
Well, thanks for doing this with me, Solo. See you in 3 days.
See you then. See you later.
Brutal.